Sam, keeping it true, watching old movies so you don't have to. With the benefit of hindsight, we'll see where the movies truly awful, or did it change history? Good evening. And welcome back to the Benefit of Hindsight podcast, the movie podcast in which a father and son talk about movies that they watched together long ago.
We give each movie a memory score and then rewatch the movie to see whether or not it's better or worse than we remember, and then we score the movie again.
With me, as ever, is my son Sam. Good evening, Sam.
Good evening, Dad. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. We had a conversation before we started recording in which I indicated that I had not been good, but I'm all better now.
Good.
And how are you?
I'm all right. I think that intro was very interesting because you seemed to give it loads of character and I was fighting a cough unintentionally, but I made it through.
I think if you hadn't mentioned it, nobody would have noticed. Do you think there was character in that?
I think there's a little bit of character.
Oh, that's very kind of you to say so. Thank you very much. Yeah. I was going to ask you about your anecdote of the week, which we know that our listeners are always waiting for, but you indicated to me that you didn't have one.
No, I'm trying to think of something. I mean, it's not interesting, but last Friday afternoon, I came up with three things I wanted to do, and I successfully did all three, which I think is quite impressive.
Are we going to find out what those three things are? Or were,
the problem
rather?
Is that on the day of, I was really confused. I kept forgetting what they were that I needed to do, so I can't remember what they were now. One of them was to fix a bike, which I did successfully. So there you go.
Well, that's good. I think you have set yourself a target, and you have achieved your goal of fixing a bike, and two other things that you can no longer remember.
Yeah.
That's quite the anecdote.
Thanks. It wasn't brilliant, but we worked with it.
Well, I think it's definitely one for the memoirs.
All right.
let's get straight on to our listener question, which is from Jack. Jack is in Brighton. Hi, Jack from Brighton.
Hi, Jack.
I know. I realise as soon as those words came out of my mouth, it's probably a thing you should never say. Hello, Jack from Brighton.
You ever written an email where you have to say, hi, Jack, and immediately go, oh, no, hello, instead?
I have on more than one occasion I've had to do that. So, hello, Jack, and thank you very much for your email from Brighton. Jack says that he listened to our podcast of last week and was interested in our conversation about adverts, which we'll talk about in just a moment. And he asks us this question. Actually, he phrased it like this. Would I ask Sam... what was his favorite trailer, or rather the one that made him the most excited when he saw it? Great question, Jack. Thank you.
Yeah, that is great. I think in recent years, the Avengers ones have been quite good. I remember Avengers Infinity War. I watched too many of the trailers and it kind of ruined the film a little bit. Oh, no, that's not true. That's the other way around. I only watched the first trailer for Infinity War because it was this big, exciting thing, and because I didn't want any spoilers for it. But then by the time it had come out, I'd rewatched the trailer, and it taught me nothing. By the time Endgame came around, I decided to watch all the trailers because they weren't going to spoil anything. I don't know if that really answers the question, but there's always been a lot. We always had that game of whether we'd go and see films at the cinema, so that must have had an impact somewhere.
Thumbs up, thumbs down. I remember that game.
Yeah.
I think, to answer Jack's question, even though he asked me to direct it to you, thanks, Jack, I think I have a couple. I very clearly remember going to the movies. Maybe you were there, I don't know. But there was a teaser trailer for Lord of the Rings. And it was before... So this is vaguely pre-internet. The internet, as it were, at that time was in its infancy, and by all means, not everybody had it. So I didn't know there was a Lord of the Rings movie coming out, and it was just this shortest thing, about 30 seconds, and it's a shot of the Shire, not easy to say, and it was one of the Black Riders came into view, and you heard the sort of wail of the Black Rider, and basically it said, Lord of the Rings, coming soon. And it was about 30 seconds, and I thought, oh my good heavens, I may cry. I was so excited. That was a really big one that I remember. I think that's probably the only trailer I remember thinking, oh my goodness gracious me. There are other ones. Jurassic Park was a big one years ago. But other than that, I think the Lord of the Rings is going to be my answer.
It's such a weird concept nowadays that you used to go to the cinema and that's how you'd learn of a film coming out. But now you just get all this social media and the trailers just at your fingertips. It's crazy.
Absolutely. It is absolutely true. You wouldn't know things were happening unless you were kind of buying the magazines or whatever. You just wouldn't know anything was coming until you saw that trailer. And that's very, very true. It's always super exciting. And I definitely remember Thumbs Up, Thumbs Down, which was our thing. I wish, you know, at the time, I wish we'd paid more attention to that because it would super help the podcast. But I do remember that. So thanks, Jack, for that question. And I hope we've answered it. So some of the Avengers for Sam and Lord of the Rings for me. Did you do your homework? Did you go away and watch the advert?
I'd forgotten what it was called. Then I edited the podcast. And no, I didn't.
Okay. So do you want to save that
for next
week?
Did you do your homework?
I did. I watched it, yeah. But let's do that. Let's save that for next week, okay?
Okay.
And just put a little black mark in your book there for forgetting your homework. How dare you?
There was another thing that you told me to do, though, which I can't remember what it was now.
I can't remember what it was either. So Sam and I, of course, have been away and we have rewatched Finding Nemo, which was my choice. And I gave it, I think, a very generous 9 out of 10. What did you give it from memory, Sam?
Yeah, I also gave it a very generous 8 out of 10, yeah.
So 17 overall, an 8.5 aggregate benefit of hindsight movie score. The lead-in question of the week, do you think your score will change?
I think it might have, yeah.
That was very rhythmic the way I asked that question.
It was, yeah.
Do you? I'm not going to do it again. People probably got it the first time. I think my score has changed. Let's investigate and find out why. Typically, we start with cast. I don't know how to do that, really, because in an animated movie, there are two or three voices that you might recognize. And then if you look at the cast list, there's not a lot of people that you go, okay, that person's in it, that person's in it, and that person's in it. But I suppose the obvious one would be Ellen DeGeneres, who went on to become quite famous after this and was a little bit famous before it.
Now cancelled.
Absolutely cancelled. You always feel slightly awkward talking about these people. Who knew 22 years ago that she would be cancelled? So what did you make of her as the voice of Dory? I am interested in this because I have got two opinions on it.
Well, I think, I don't know, I feel like Dory is the basis of my opinion on this film, which is concerning in a way, I think, considering it's about Nemo, I suppose. I think she's good as Dory. I think she sells it quite well, and in a way I think she's kind of become that character, and she's famous for that character, and she's famous for many other things, but I don't know, it's just cancelled, but it's difficult to separate her and Dory at this point. And I think Dory and Ellen are the anchor point of this film, no pun intended. And she's the comedic effect, comedic value, and she needs to be there, it needs to work. And I think every line delivers, but I'll get more on that later. What did you think?
I'm with you on some of that, or probably all of that, actually. When the movie began, I was thinking, I had forgotten how shouty this character is.
Yeah.
It's like the volume is turned up to 11 continuously. And then as the movie progressed, so it became a touch more subtle, dare I say. There was a little bit of something else in amongst all of the shouting. And so by the end of it, I had kind of gone full circle from finding Dory surprisingly irritating all the way back round to a hugely sympathetic character. And this is probably not the right time to say this, but I had also forgotten the little running joke where she keeps getting his name wrong.
Yeah.
So Fabio, and right at the end, and the last thing, one of the last things she says is, "Well, there goes little Elmo." It really made me laugh. So I warmed to Dory throughout, and I warmed to Ellen's performance of it. But I did find it mildly irritating at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, I think for me it was about the middle of the movie where it suddenly got old, and I wasn't enjoying it as much. And then by the end of it, you're a bit relieved that it's over in a way, but also, at the point that I was saying is like she's the funny one. I feel like it doesn't work without Dory.
No, you can't make the movie without her. She is the beating heart of the movie. She drives the whole thing forward in her own unique way. I mean, there are other people, obviously. Willem Dafoe makes an appearance as Gil. Alison Janney as Peach. Jeffrey Rush is in there.
I didn't know that until I saw the credits.
Yeah, I'm sort of reading this. Eric Banner.
Yeah.
And John Ratzenberger, of course. Is in there. Barry Humphries. So there is a decent voice cast, and I like the kind of focus on Australians as well for the Australian characters. That's quite good. But actually, I was thinking about questions I would ask about the cast, I thought maybe it's better to ask questions about the characters. Because in this particular animated movie, it's all about what you see sort of on screen and in front of you. So you've got the simplicity of the father and son relationship between Marlin and Nemo. What did you make of that, for example?
I feel like I wish the movie spent a bit more time on them, to be honest, together. But I think it was, in terms of Pixar films, it worked perfectly. In the sense that he's lost everything except he's got this son. And that's his most treasured thing. That's the thing he cares about the most. And it totally works. And even the sort of helicopter parent type thing.
Yeah.
I do like that relationship. But I do wish it was built upon a bit more with them having more time together. But then that's not the point of the film. So I think in a way their relationship to me is built on the absence of those characters being together. And it's about the determination of Marlin finding his son and going on that adventure, and Nemo. And I think I do like part of the Nemo storyline. When something bad's happening to him in the tank, he'll call for his dad's name, and I think that does build the character quite well.
Yeah, it is, as you say, it's a nice simplistic relationship. I would have liked to have seen a little bit more development, but I think that's just the grown-up. You know, it's not necessarily about development. It is, I have loads of children. I've lost all of my children. I have one left. He's got a little Finn. Oh, my goodness, he's gone. I need to go and find him. Stop at nothing. And I guess it's a different kind of movie if it has 20 minutes worth of character development.
Yeah.
It does recover from the kind of crushing sadness of the first 2 minutes better than other films that do that kind of thing. So, I mean, Bambi never recovers, ever, right? And I defy anybody to tell me that it does. To a certain extent, Up never quite recovers either.
Yeah, this reminded me a lot of Up, actually, for that bit.
But this does seem to recover from that in a way that those films don't manage. I think that is a testament to what we've just said, which is plot set up, and we're off. Maybe 10 minutes in, Marlin and Dory having their first encounter with the sharks. It wastes no time.
I think that's a product of being a kids' film.
Yeah, I agree. But not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, you know, there's loads of films that we've watched on this podcast where you think there's a brilliant film if it was just 20, 30 minutes shorter. Like, well, let's not give any examples, we've already talked about them, but, but there are definitely films where you think if this film was half an hour shorter. I want to say one, but I know you're going to poke me in the eye with a pencil, so I won't.
Yeah. I think I know which one you mean. Yeah.
Most recent Mission Impossible movie.
Oh, yeah.
Could be 30 minutes shorter.
Do you want to close your eyes while I grab a pencil?
Yeah, sure. Ow!
No, I know what you mean.
But the supporting cast of characters, and not necessarily actors who play those characters, are all great. They all serve a purpose in the story. The sharks, quite funny, quite comic. The fish in the tank, what a brilliant secondary cast you've got going on there. That's lovely. The pelican and all of that stuff. Every single character serves a purpose in the movie.
And they're also like, they work within the world. So you've got the seagulls, which turn out to be the villains, and that creates a cool chase scene. And it all just, everything works well together. It's the classic Pixar recipe, to be honest. Yeah.
And all the little in jokes that like the seagulls who are constantly saying the word mine. And that reminds me of the fact that because seagulls were a feature of your childhood. after watching this film, that's all you can hear them saying.
Yeah, I realized that actually, even today,
it's such a brilliant observation. But even like things like the crabs who are cleaning the pipe or whatever, and they're feeding off the pipe at the end, going, that's my bit, get off, that's my bit. All these little kind of genius things, and the fish that swimming into the net, and how they're all kind of, I don't know, not particularly clever fish, and they need to be told. There's nothing wasted in this movie. I think it's the point that I'm trying to make.
No, I think it's a whole bunch of Pixarisms, so to speak, because they're quite good at that. I can think of more recent examples of that as well, yeah.
I do think that Pixar had hit their stride in this particular moment.
I do think they've sort of come up with the formula. They got their idea of Toy Story working. Now let's move on to what else we can do. Yes, this works too. Just going off the back of something that you said actually about other characters, I forgot how cool Bruce was.
Yeah, I'd forgotten as well. Yeah.
This reminded me of something, and we love a good memory from the past. Do you remember me having a hand-painted Nemo on my bedroom wall?
Yes. Yes, yeah. I do remember.
Fun fact, that was still there when we moved about 10 years ago.
Oh,
I'd forgotten it was there, to be honest, because I think it was behind like a cupboard or something towards the end of its existence. But yeah, by the time we'd moved everything out, there it was, Nemo on the wall. Also, I had a Nemo teddy bear, which I took around everywhere at some point, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, I do remember this being a particularly important film in your childhood. Maybe not important in the sense of like, I don't know, Star Wars was important to you, or Transformers, or all of those things that sort of later on have been a contributory factor to your personality. But this was, and going back in time, you were young, you were bang on target for this movie, but it was a big deal. You liked it, that you had the toys, you wanted everything, you wanted to watch it. We would go to aquariums and look at clownfish. Nice. This was a thing. And I remember taking photographs of clownfish at an aquarium and you being super excited by them.
I do remember that, actually. Yeah, we've probably got those pictures lying around.
They must be somewhere. And the whole thing in the aquarium was set up to look like the tank from Finding Nemo. So they had a dory fish and all the fish from the fish tank in the dentist's office and things. And you were very excited by that. And I remember very well that Finding Nemo teddy that you had.
I do think it gave a bit of a boost to dentists having fish at that point, yeah.
Well, did you know, this is probably one of the bits of trivia you were going to share, but it also gave a very worrying boost to the sale of tropical fish.
Yeah, I think I did know that. It's not my trivia, but yeah, I'm not surprised, to be honest.
And so, like, animal rights activists, probably correctly, were very concerned by the fact that sales of these kinds of fish went through the roof, and that people really didn't know how to care for what is essentially a very complicated pet. It's a saltwater fish. It requires high maintenance. And they kind of went out and said, stop doing it and please stop selling them.
Completely unrelated, but you've just reminded me of a fact I discovered today.
Let's hear it.
Apparently cats can drink salt water because their kidneys or something, or liver maybe, is able to separate it well enough that they can drink it.
Well, there you go. Can't swim, though.
Well, I've seen a cat swim before.
You need to give that some context.
I saw a video where a cat swam for the first time.
Okay. All right. Okay, great. I just, it's like, come on then. Oh, you're swimming. There we go. No, I don't know quite where that all of that came from. Getting back to my point about Pixar hitting their stride, I think that animation should have got better and yet has in fact got worse over the last 20 years. The animation in this movie is staggering in its accomplishment.
It is. I'm just trying to think if Finding Dory had better CGI, but I haven't really picked up on that. But I'm also wondering if they would have just used the same assets, so to speak.
Yeah, maybe all these stuff are saved in a hard drive. And if you think about computer power 20 years ago, I'm sure that they had access to the very best, everything you'd ever want in a computer. And maybe we have this slight inclination towards computers being much, much weaker 20 years ago. But I can't imagine that they were operating on the same level that even a very powerful modern desktop or MacBook computer is operating on, and yet this is what they can achieve. It's absolutely staggering how good this animation is.
I think Pixar have just always held the reins with how good their animation is, and I think there's a reason why they've kept it the same way for years since. Although it was announced recently that they were going to try a new animation style, but I guarantee you it won't work quite as well, because everyone's so used to this same animation that they've seen. And I think it just gives credit to how good it was back then.
Mm-hmm. I was watching the movie, and I was watching it in decent high definition on a relatively okay television, and I'm sure there are better ways to watch it in terms of the available technology, but I was blown away by the quality of the animation. There's no gap, there's no join. I do somehow think that unrealistic environments, or rather environments that you're unfamiliar with, do work better in animation than the recreation of humans.
True. Actually, it's funny, I saw a bit of trivia which said that one of the, like, two of the scenes are actually identical shots, but played at different parts of the film. And I think they're both when Dory is consoling Marlin. But you'd never notice, because it just works so well.
Yeah, it I don't like to repeat the point that I made, but if you look at modern animated films from the last 5 years, they simply don't compare. I don't know whether it's just because there's not enough care and love and attention paid to them, or whether or not the technology's made it so much easier that you have to try less hard.
Yeah, that's probably it, to be fair.
But there you go. I mean, I think this is... I think it's peak Pixar, this movie, in every sense.
Right, yeah.
And staggeringly, to get onto a point about that, you look at box office and how much it costs to make. And again, we're going back to 2003, and so things are different. It costs $94 million to make this movie. And if you look at the cost of more recent movies, I mean, for example, we did National Treasure a couple of weeks ago, and that cost $110 million to make, and that's only 2 or 3 years later. So they are also doing staggering things for the money, and it went on, just in case you're interested, to make 10 times its budget, $940 million at the box office.
Whoa.
And they deliberately resisted a sequel because they felt that the movie was perfectly finished where it was.
It's so funny how back in the day, Pixar was like, we're not making sequels, to the point where they had to make a prequel at one point, and now they're just throwing sequels out left, right and center. That's crazy.
Do you know this movie has a impressive record. Would you like to know what that impressive record is?
Yeah, of course.
Of course you would. It remains the highest selling DVD of all time.
Wow.
There you go.
Can't be beaten now.
No, that's probably true. Yeah, it has no DVD has sold more than Finding Nemo.
That's cool.
Yeah, and as
we
you
had
correct,
the DVD.
Absolutely. As you correctly point out, it seems almost certain that nobody will ever beat that record.
Yeah.
And it came out again, didn't it? It came out in 2012 as a 3D movie as well, if you remember.
Of course it did, yeah.
I don't know that I watched the 3D movie.
No, I wouldn't have seen that. No,
but it was incredibly popular and absolutely loved it. In fact, only a handful of other movies by Pixar have bettered it. I think the only one that's ever, the only other Pixar movie that's made more money is Toy Story 3. Actually,
you can see this film live, though.
You what? What's that?
Yeah, if you go to the sea where you'd find all of these fish, kidnap a clownfish's son, you can watch this film live.
Wow. Well, I wouldn't
recommend it.
I did not know that. There we go.
No, there you go. That's not my out-of-pocket take.
But it's definitely interesting. Do you know how many Oscars this movie won?
Oh, two.
Two. Well, it was nominated for many Oscars, actually, but it only won one. It won best animated movie.
Cool, fair enough.
It was as you would assume that it did. It was nominated for other ones. It was nominated for best original screenplay, best animated feature, best original score, and best sound editing. It was nominated for an awful lot of awards in some very prestigious things. Surprisingly, didn't win that many. Honestly, yeah. I mean, it cleaned up at the Annie Awards, as you would expect it to do. But actually, it was a lot of nominations, but very few wins.
I would have thought that it was up for score, like, yeah.
Well, that's my next question. Soundtrack. Thomas Newman, what did we make of the soundtrack?
It's a beautiful soundtrack. It's so well done, and it captures the feeling and the mood of it absolutely.
I was watching the movie and I was getting carried away by, as I think people can already tell, what the wonder of the animation. And I was watching, I was thinking, I've never noticed, but this might be the best soundtrack of all time ever. Maybe that's an exaggeration, but like all of the things I discovered in this movie, literally everything works.
It's so peaceful when it needs to be and just marries well with the visuals of like being underwater.
Yeah.
And the colours. Yeah.
And it has real moments of depth and sadness, moments of great joy, and it's doing all of this stuff in the best way that soundtracks do, almost unnoticed. And it's only then when you tune into the soundtrack, you think if you took the soundtrack away, you're going to lose an awful lot of the emotion that you're feeling.
I don't know if I'd say it was one of the best of all time, but I think it's an art piece is what I would say, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I would never challenge you on that, but I mean, yeah, I mean, it is. I would struggle to think of one where what you see on screen and what you feel and the capturing of that moment, I would struggle to think of one that was better overall.
Yeah.
It's a guy called Thomas Newman. And he's done some, very, very big soundtracks. Shawshank Redemption, which is one of those movies that everybody references as the best movie that nobody saw the first time around, but has a fantastic soundtrack. The Road to Perdition, Finding Nemo, A Series of Unfortunate Events, WALL-E, Skyfall, Scepter. He's done some biggies. And he is, of course, the cousin of Randy Newman, who is the singer-songwriter that does so many Pixar songs.
I wonder if it might have had a connection, yeah.
So there you go. It's peak soundtrack writing, in my view, as well. And this guy, I was looking at his credits thinking, yeah, every single one of those soundtracks is a winner, definitely. So you must have lots of trivia about this movie. I love listening to your trivia.
Thanks. I do have quite a bit, actually. I found quite a few interesting ones and a few stupid ones. Okay. And I love the stupid ones. Something I didn't realise, but looking back, it's obvious. I'm glad that I noticed in the end. Deb's reflection and alter ego is Flo. And the joke there is ebb and flow, like the tide.
Ah,
I never noticed.
That's cool. That is clever.
Yeah, the more you know.
The more you know.
Another one that's quite strange is in order to get the facial expressions of the fish, particularly the eyes, they studied dogs. It makes sense, I can see it, but you'd have thought fish. But then again, you wouldn't really get much emotion from a fish.
That is true.
I want that on a t-shirt.
Don't get much emotion from a fish. Benefit of hindsight quotes, ladies and gentlemen, for you all, don't get a lot of emotion from a fish. they did a very good job, actually, as they always do, of you have a vague idea of what a face looks like, and they humanize these faces without ever making them completely human.
It's weird because, like, even Monsters, Inc. at that point, you'd think these monsters would look like monsters, but there's a human sort of value to their faces, yeah. They're good, like, at that, too.
And even Bug's Life, which is I think, predates our movie-going times. But even that is, these are insects, and yet, and they've got insect faces, and yet we know exactly what they're thinking and speaking. It's great. It's brilliant Pixar stuff.
I don't know if this point makes any sense, but it's interesting because how do you convey sadness in something where the tears just wouldn't exist? Because, like, surely fish can't cry.
Yeah.
Or if they do, you wouldn't know.
That is true.
Maybe fish have cried for so long, that's where the sea came from.
Maybe that's why they're so sad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, sorry if you're out there, fish, and you're feeling sad. I don't think that's it, though.
No, I'd hope not. I'd hope they're happy in some way.
I think fish are generally happy. Just keep swimming.
Exactly, yeah. Speaking of Dory, she never says Marlin's name in the whole film, even though she's with him the entire time.
That is an interesting thing. Marlin's name is... You know he's called Marlin, but very few people call him Marlin. There's one reference to it in the movie. And so he's either Dad or nobody else. And yet we all know he's called Marlin. Good point. Fascinating. It is interesting.
I don't know. I wonder if it was a character choice not to have her say Marlin, though, and like a memory thing.
I don't know. There's lots of little things like that, isn't there? There's things where you just don't realize what they are until you sort of watch them back. To go down a well-trodden road of reference, have you seen that little thing that does the round on the internet where two female characters in Lord of the Rings interact with each other?
Yeah.
And it's
the Bechdel test.
Yeah, it's literally when the mother says to Freya, "You need to go now." That is the only moment that two female characters interact with each other.
It's just reminded me as well is you don't realise that Legolas and Frodo never say anything to each other in the movies.
That was my next one. And Legolas only has 11 lines of dialogue in The Fellowship of the Ring.
Actually, he does say one thing to Frodo. My bad, yeah.
Which is, and my bow or whatever.
Bow, yeah, that's the one, yeah.
But yeah, so there's all these little things, and I don't know whether it's deliberate or whether or not it's just because these movies become so studied over time. I don't know.
Yeah. And just for those out there who wanted to count, Crush says dude 21 times. Squirt says it 4 times.
Dude, that's a good fact.
Yeah.
I did find Crush slightly irritating.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie about that.
Yeah, I think... Yeah, he's one of those characters where it just doesn't grow very well. Although he has become a sort of own famous thing at Disney World, I think, yeah.
Yeah, and I get that, but maybe it just didn't work for me. I have a piece of trivia, if you don't mind. I don't like to steal your trivia thunder. Do you know that the actor William H. Macy was originally cast in the role of Marlin?
And I saw that, yeah.
He had recorded many lines, and you know, almost at the point of all of being finished, and in the end they just decided that it wasn't working, and they changed it.
Wow.
And so they got in Albert Brooks famously to play Marlin, and the rest, as they say, is history. But yeah, they basically had decided that it just wasn't working with William H. Macy. They felt he was too serious.
I wonder how often that actually happens, though, because I feel like I've heard it a few times. Not with those two actors in particular, although that would get you very upset. You'd seek vengeance.
Yeah, I think there are some famous ones. I just want to give another example, but I'm conscious of the fact that it's Lord of the Rings again. I mean, famously, the one that I think would be a reference point for the thing that we're talking about is, and again, well-trodden road here, but Viggo Mortensen in Lord of the Rings was not the original choice for Aragorn. It was an actor called Stuart Townsend. And they decided really about 8 or 9 weeks into rehearsals that it wasn't working. And there's that very famous story. Sam Jones, who played Flash Gordon in Flash Gordon, 1980, soundtrack music by Queen, they redubbed his voice because they didn't like it. And so every single line that comes out of his mouth in that movie is not his voice.
I didn't know that.
My Fair Lady, Audrey Hepburn isn't doing the singing.
Yeah.
What's the other one? There's a couple like this. The Greatest Showman, Rebecca Ferguson. Not her singing. There's quite a few like that where they make these decisions and, you know, and sometimes it's because this is the actress, she can't sing, so here we go. But other times it's like, yeah, this is a thing that isn't working. Well, Marty McFly,
Michael J. Fox, that's a good one. Yeah,
Eric Stoltz. There is actually quite a lot of that movie you can watch with a different actor in it.
Yeah, true.
So yeah, it does happen pretty often. I think people get left on the cutting room floor more than they're prepared to admit as well.
True. Yeah, I think that happens. Yeah,
like Christopher Lee in a Lord of the Rings movie.
Another one.
I'm sure you have out-of-pocket takes about this movie as well. There must be hundreds. I do. Okay.
Yeah, there's always 100, but I have to pick one. Okay. I don't want to see the best one because that would be awkward. And much like how museums became popular after Night at the Museum, swimming down became popular for fish after the release of this film, sparking the Great Fish Drought of 2003.
Yeah, I'm surprised we hadn't mentioned that before. Yeah, it's good. Yeah, I'd forgotten about that. Yeah, I mean, there was a shortage, if I remember.
True story. Absolutely.
Fish and chips. Yeah, you have to have a sausage instead.
Yeah, that's right. I remember.
I think I am ready after that long excursion through Finding Nemo, and there's many things we could have said and probably haven't, but I do think I'm ready to move to my scores. What about you?
I am, yeah. I struggled to make notes about this film, actually. I'm ready to move on. That sounds terrible.
Oh, okay.
I'm ready to go to the scores.
Well, I went first, didn't I?
Yes.
So I get to re-score the movie from memory. No, from the benefit of hindsight. How's this podcast work again?
I don't know.
I gave it 9 out of 10, remembering it very fondly. I think, upon reflection, this is Pixar at its finest. It is a masterpiece. If it isn't the best Pixar movie, then I don't know what is, possibly Wall-E. I don't think it will ever be improved upon. It's a 10.
Wow.
It's quite the limb to go out on there. It's a joy. And even the bits about it that I didn't particularly like were just a matter of personal taste. It was everything I would have expected and way more than I remembered.
Cool. I like that summary. Yeah. Unfortunately, for me, I've gone slightly down. I've jumped from an 8 out of 10 to, I think, about a 7, I think I'll say. Just because, I don't know, I feel like as an adult, it might have lost its joy that I would have had as a kid seeing it. Like, don't get me wrong, I did enjoy it this time around, but I don't know. I feel like I've ever so slightly outgrown it, maybe.
I wonder if that comes back round.
Possibly, yeah.
Because when you and I watched this movie together the first time round, it would have just been a perfectly lovely kids' film. And I wonder if perhaps my sense of nostalgia for a time long past and, you know, a time in you know, our history and in movie making history that will never return, maybe that's coloured my judgment. But I just think it's Pixar at its finest, yeah. But I wouldn't disagree with what you're saying.
Yeah. What would you say your one-word review is then?
Masterpiece.
Fair enough, yeah.
And yours?
That was quick.
And yours?
Well, I was thinking about this. I've thought of two made-up, merged-together words, and I don't know which one to pick, so I'm going to give you both anyway. I think, first one, Pixar, like peak and Pixar.
Got it, yeah.
Pixar.
Like it.
And then the second one is fish and historical with fishtorical.
Brilliant. I think they're both genius. I accept both of them. I should confess that I haven't seen Finding Dory and may now go and watch it. Or should I just leave it?
Maybe. I think I've seen it once properly and maybe a second time less than properly because I think it was just on at Christmas. I think I remember enjoying it, but it's one of those sequels where was it really necessary?
No.
Also, I have to bear in mind, though, that Nemo's a different actor now, too, because he's grown up.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, yeah. That's something. Yeah, the person playing Nemo is probably mid-30s now, yeah. So overall, then, this movie has scored 17, both from memory and from Benefit of Hindsight rewatch, but for very different reasons. Nevertheless, it remains quite a high one on 8.5 out of 10. Shall we move on to the elephant in the room?
Yeah.
It's your turn. It is episode 50. And for those of you who are new to the podcast and you're just picking up a few episodes and you haven't been bothered, probably correctly, to go back and listen to the other 48, soon to be 49, soon to be 50. That would make sense, by the way. We agreed some time ago that if we ever got to 50 episodes, we would watch the movie that ruined Sam's childhood, and it then has subsequently landed that it remains Sam's choice of movie for episode 50. So do you want to tell our listener what we'll be watching this week?
Okay, just as another side thing, I've had it open on the screen the whole time in a different tab, and I kept seeing the title of it and was like, oh, okay. Anyway, it's the 2008 classic Cloverfield.
Uh-oh. And context is everything. I watched this movie, which was rated higher than Sam's age at that point. So no more information is required. Sam and I had, however, watched a couple of Godzillas, Lord of the Rings, King Kong, anything with monsters and monsters doing bad things. And at no point had Sam been fazed by any of those things. So I watched this movie and I thought, you know what? I think Sam could probably watch this. So one night, when it was just me and him at home, we watched this movie, right? And it wasn't at the cinema, true. So we're slightly breaking the rules. And we sat and watched it, and you never really admitted this to me until many years later. But I think it was the defining, terrifying movie of your childhood, correct?
Correct, yes. To this day.
And we all have one. I watched An American Wolf in London when I was probably about 11 years old, and for many years afterwards would have regular waking up in the middle of the night moments. And my brothers and sisters, to annoy me, would do werewolf howls outside the window.
Well, I never had that, so that's a good thing.
Yeah. So, which was cruel. But yeah, so are we going to go ahead with Cloverfield?
Well, I don't know. There's a part of me that does want to watch it again and at least try, but there's a part of me that, I don't know, physically I might not be able to. So there's also the part of me that doesn't want to share too much right now of my opinion, okay, and whatnot, because then how are we going to fill the episode other than just randomly talking about anything else? So I don't really want to say too much this side of it.
Okay.
But what I will say is I'll give it a go. I have tried to give it a go in the past, but couldn't get past my incredibly sweaty hands after just sitting and watching it, because that happens, apparently. So let's give it a go. The funny thing about this, though, is that this could just be a very elaborate way of making you watch it again, and I don't have to suffer that. But well, you have to watch it.
That is true. Okay, I think that's very fair. I think people know enough about why we're doing it again. And there's no backup. If we can't get through it, then we'll come on and talk about why we couldn't get through it. But yeah, the podcast demands you give it a memory score.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I don't know if I should say, but I'll keep it vague as possible. Admittedly, I wanted to see this film. We saw the trailer, I liked it. But then years later, we sat and watched it, more to it. So I have to kind of give it a memory score based on how I watched it. I don't know if I can give minus numbers.
Presumably, but, though, you can give it a big fat donut, though, right?
Yeah, it's going to have to be a big fat monster-sized donut.
Okay.
Eat that instead, please.
My memory
Not the people.
Of my memory of this movie was, and obviously different from yours, my memory of it, that it was actually really good. Kind of a staggering achievement in I think it was the pinnacle of found footage movies, which had traditionally been made on relatively short budgets. And Blair Witch, of course, famously made for $30,000, goes on to make $300 million. So there was a fashion for found footage movies. But this one had that kind of J.J. Abrams thing going on, where it was found footage, but actually it was full of really good special effects and so on and so forth. So I remember being sort of really impressed by it, but I didn't love it. I'm going to go with 6 out of 10.
Okay.
Cool. So there we are. So join us next week when we will get the answer to life's big questions. Did Sam watch Cloverfield again? I would like to add one last thing on this, if I may. And,
yeah.
it's a genuine one last thing on this. And it's also genuine and heartfelt. Okay?
Okay.
That is, if it really bothers you, don't watch it. We come on, do something else next week. Okay?
Okay. I feel like There's no point in rejigging what we're watching, so I think we should try and fill it through.
Okay.
It might be the shortest episode ever, but...
Well, there'd be as much conversation, I think, to have about why you didn't finish it, but let's see.
Yeah.
Because if someone said to me, go and watch An American Werewolf in London again, I think I probably could. Whether or not I'd want to is a completely different question, but I think I probably could if somebody told me to go and do that. So we all have that movie. I have an update on Otterfest.
Oh,
Coldplay said no. So Coldplay aren't going to be there. Robbie Williams cover performer, Bobby Williams is available. Wants 1,500 quid.
Okay.
I don't know.
Manageable.
Whether you want, the Ricky Gervais lookalike available for 750 quid. So maybe sort of Ricky Gervais lookalike instead.
Okay.
And Bobby Williams. Are we not sure about that, are we?
We'll pencil him in. Well, okay. That's not how that works, but we'll put it in pencil, yeah.
Noasis are available. Staggeringly, Noasis, £5,000.
Wow.
I know. You can get Bobby Williams for that. You can get 3 Bobby Williams for that.
That should be the new currency.
Yeah, it should, shouldn't it? It's basically the equivalent of 4 Bobby Williams. I bought a new car. how many Bobbies? 6. That's not bad. Yeah, there we are. So if there are any more updates on Otterfest, I'll keep you posted. But at the moment, I'm thinking Ricky Gervais, 750.
Yeah.
He's not a very good lookalike, though, I have to say.
Well, maybe don't bother then.
Yeah. But, you know, we need, if we build it, they will come. So we need to choose a date and we will make Otterfest happen. And it will be a celebration of all things Otter.
Okay.
If anybody's listened to this, literally, if anybody's listened to this or has got this far, into the podcast after we finished talking about things and has any advice on how to make a festival about otters, drop us a line, thebenefitofhindsightpodcast@gmail.com, which is also the same email you can send us questions. If you want to know why we're talking about otters, feel free to ask. We'd be happy to answer. But I think that's a nice place to round off the podcast.
Okay, do you know what day it is?
I don't know what day it is today.
It's apparently Day of the Seafarer, but who cares? It's Linda Cardellini's birthday, and I just wanted to give her a shout-out because of the Cardellini manoeuvre.
Cardellini manoeuvre. Do you think Linda Cardellini, every time she has a birthday, has to add a year to her age because of the Cardellini manoeuvre? Maybe if you are Linda Cardellini and you invoke the Cardellini manoeuvre for age, it takes a year off.
Yes, that's the one, yeah.
Well, all that's left for Sam and I then is to say goodbye. Thank you for listening to our podcast, and we'll be back next week with our thoughts and opinions on which we're all looking forward to going away and watching again. Let's wish Sam all the very best.
Thank you.
And therefore it is goodbye from me. Bye.
And goodbye from me.
Bye.
And next time you feel sad, just be happy. You won't feel sad anymore.
I like that. Just keep swimming.
Exactly.
Bye.
With the benefit of hindsight, we'll see, were the movies truly awful, or did they change history?